Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspective. And I'm Diana Isaac, with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And today, this episode, we want to spend our time talking about the new ACE type 2 diabetes treatment algorithm, which was actually just released May 5th. I had the pleasure to be at the ACE conference this year, which was fantastic. And Dr. Earl Hirsch gave a wonderful keynote presentation where he unveiled the new guidelines. He also happened to give an incredible talk that really talked about how we've progressed with all things in diabetes, how we used to not even know that lowering A1C was beneficial. There was actually a time we didn't even know that. And from the times where all we had was urine to monitor glucose levels, how a glucose meter was truly revolutionary at that time. And to think about how far we've come is really, really incredible. So with that, Natalie, I know you've had a chance to dive into the new guidelines. So I'm just kind of curious your overall thought.
So my overall thought is I love how they broke it down into sections, right? So, you know, there is a complication-centric model for the care of persons with overweight obesity, right? That is all by itself a really great place for us to start, because we know that's a big challenge with people with type 2 diabetes, right? And the way they broke it down is not just by BMI, right? This is like BMI, your obesity level is this, you know, tell the person to eat less. And ACE has taken this step backwards and said, wait a minute, that's not enough. It doesn't work, or everyone would be able to lose weight easily. They address nutrition, physical activity, sleep and sleep apnea, counseling, limiting alcohol, right? Smoking cessation, medications, as well as other interventions like screening in managing the ABCD complications.
Yeah, I like how they use the terminology ABCD, adiposity-based chronic disease, and really characterize the different interventions that are important based on kind of the staging, which is based on BMI and the presence of comorbidity. Also, the fact that this is really very in line with ADA, because I've had the great privilege of being involved with those guidelines. And this is really like right on point in terms of physical activity guidance, the nutrition, being individualized, the importance we've learned of sleep and everything. And so, yeah, I think this is a great addition to the guidelines this time.
And I think we all forget, like, it's a lot. When you have a person in front of you who has type 2 diabetes, you know, to think about blood pressure, lipids, sleep apnea, dental hygiene, exercise, right? Their mental health, their medications, you know, their time and range, their, you know, can I get them a sensor? How do I get it through insurance? What's going on? Can I get them a longer acting basal if they need it? You know, and jumping through all those hoops in your head as you're sitting with someone in front of you is a lot. And sometimes knowing the guidelines and having them in very specific, here you go, this is the algorithm to follow, really helps a clinician stay focused and make sure that they address all those things.
Yeah, I hope they'll make the cards. Like, I remember the last guideline from ACE was 2020, and a lot of the companies made cards and things that you could carry around, give to students and stuff. So I hope they do that again. Also, I really like kind of just the principles of the ACE Comprehensive Type 2 Diabetes Management Algorithm, how they lift out 10 of these key principles. And like we've already been talking about, lifestyle is like really the foundation. That is number one, then the weight. And some of the other kind of key things in there that I especially like is that CGM is highly recommended to assist patients in reaching their goals safely. And that's like a key, one of these key 10 key foundations that I'm so glad to see that mentioned in there.
And it kind of goes in line with that, the new Medicare guidelines that say, you know, if you, you know, it used to be, you know, multiple daily injections, and now where basal only, or even risk for hypoglycemia, which would be sulfonylureas, right? If you have a history of hypoglycemia, you don't even need to be on insulin anymore. And Medicare is recognizing that that is a real risk. So I love that they're falling in line. The guidelines are falling in line, or the FDA is following the guidelines of these major organizations, right? It kind of goes hand in hand, which is really good to see.
Definitely. And like within the text, it so strongly advocates CGM really for everyone. And for those that don't have access to personal CGM, using professional CGM, even at diagnosis. So I'm thrilled to see that in there. Also, I like the part about the glycemic target. Sometimes there people are saying, well, ACE guidelines are so different from ADA, but really they're so similar. So
right.
ACE, yes, ACE advocates an A1C target, an optimal A1C of less than 6.5%, but that's if people can safely achieve it. Otherwise, it talks about one of the 10 foundations is individualized all glycemic targets as needed. So if someone is higher risk of hypoglycemia and is requiring insulin to manage their glucose levels, that's when you individualize the other metrics, and they even include not just A1C, but the GMI, the glucose management indicator, time and range from CGM data, as well as fasting glucose and postprandial glucose.
I love that. And actually, so let's go reflect that back to ADA, which says less than 7 as a goal or lower if you can do it safely. So isn't that just slicing an apple two different ways, right? I mean, it really is, right? So I think we spend a lot of time going less than 7, less than 6.5. Well, we're really, every person that walks into my office to an exam room, I'm deciding what that target should be based on all the things that are affecting them, comorbid conditions, right? Their ability to pay for different medications or different things, their safety walking outside, they're doing, you know, all these other things are at play. And that's, so it's a goal, right? We have a long way to go if the average person in America still has an A1C of 9, right? And we shouldn't try to get nitpicky about it all. I think both groups are on very similar playing fields, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And then when it comes to medication selection, now we're also seeing a lot more similarities. So with the old ACE algorithm, it basically had a hierarchy depending on the starting A1C level. And it did say, it had a note in there about if cardiovascular risk reduction, choosing certain therapies like SGLT2 inhibitors or GLP-1 receptor agonists. But now we have a whole complication-centric algorithm for glycemic control.
And I love it, right? So, you know, it starts on one side that says, do you have ASCVD or high risk for ASCVD? Yes or no? What do you use? Heart failure, stroke, or you know, TIA, CKD, or none? Right. And breaks it down as to where you go next and how to individualize and pick things that make sense to reduce those risks. And it's on its own separate guideline on its own separate page of the guidelines. I am really hoping that this gets out, that people can use it like you and I do with our students, with other people that aren't as comfortable with diabetes, because now you can look and say, wait, this person's, you know, their family members have all died young of heart attacks. Let me get something on right away, early on, right? Which I'm just excited about.
Yeah, and it's very similar in a way to ADA, which theirs is all on one page, but the left side is the complication-centric, and then really the right side is kind of the other. The big difference, though, that I see here is there is a separate column for stroke or TIA. So that's kind of nice, and specifically calling out for that, the GLP-1 receptor agonist or pioglitazone is in here. So that is really kind of nice to have that, because we know there's evidence for those therapies for stroke.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, sometimes when we're talking about medications, you know, there were people, can you talk a little bit about that? Like, why are people kind of leery of pioglitazone?
Well, pioglitazone has It has a few side effects, though. So it can cause weight gain, unlike some of our other therapies like GLP-1 receptor agonists and SGLT2 inhibitors, which can cause weight loss, or others like metformin, which are more weight neutral. So in general, most people don't want to gain weight. And it can have side effects like fluid retention. But the thing is, in terms of the side effects, if we use lower doses, generally that really helps to mitigate those types of side effects, like with the weight gain and the fluid retention and everything. And also in terms of benefit, I mean, I've heard it described like exercise in a pill. I mean, it really improves insulin sensitivity in the body. So if someone is on insulin also, often that does allow us to actually decrease the insulin doses. And then it seems to have great effects for fatty liver disease. And then, of course, its benefits for stroke as well.
And I think you're right. I think what happens is people think pioglitazone and they immediately think weight gain, angioedema, you know, here we go, right? But what if we just used the lower doses and said, let's try this and really take advantage of it at those lower doses, which is a much lower side effect profile, right? It's like when I using GLP-1s, everyone doesn't get to the maximum dose of GLP-1 either, right? And we just say, this is, some is better than none. And we really want to, you know, make this cocktail of medications that does the best job preventing complications.
Right. Also, pioglitazone got a bad rap from its sister drug, rosiglitazone, which had that whole scare of that meta-analysis showing that it increased MIs. And then that was kind of eventually disputed. And that's what led to actually all the diabetes drugs now needing to show cardiovascular data and show that it's safe. So overall, that led to a positive change. However, that kind of tarnished that drug class a little bit. And so people associate it with that, which is not true. We have no evidence that pioglitazone increases MIs.
Right, right. Isn't that interesting, though? But we hold on to those things, right? Like that's the, right. Yep. So can we talk about, where should we go next? Glucose-centric algorithm for glycemic control, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about that because, so if someone doesn't have one of those comorbidities like kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, previous stroke, or heart failure, then we're going to choose agents really based on how can we achieve the glycemic target? What is the expected efficacy, assuming we're trying to reach the target of at least less than 7% or less than 6.5% if we can do that safely? And so they've actually split it up. And this kind of reminds me of how the old ADA algorithm was, because there's a section for overweight or obesity. So trying to use agents that would promote weight loss, where GLP-1 receptor agonists, SGLT2 inhibitor, or the dual GLP-GIP receptor agonist would be preferred. They also have a column for hypoglycemia risk. So choosing agents that we wouldn't expect to cause hypoglycemia. There's also an access cost, and then there's one for severe hyperglycemia. So it's interesting because when you compare this to ADA, they've kind of gotten rid of the other sections, and now it's pretty much just using agents to maximize weight loss or using them to really maximize glucose lowering. And the cost and access and hypoglycemia is, of course, it's important for ADA too. It's just more in the background. Those are things we should always have in mind versus choosing a specific path with those agents. So that's like the difference kind of between these two.
Yep. And the other thing that I will mention is we spend some time actually getting financial assistance for our the people that come to see us for diabetes. And the companies do offer financial assistance. There is some paperwork involved. And every time I do the paperwork for a person with diabetes who's sitting in front of me, I think, well, if this was my sister, I'd want her to have it. If this was my brother or my cousin, I would want them to have it, right? So, you know, it's not preferred or there are concerns, but depending on their financial situation, there are options. And I think that we need to remember that.
Yeah. And then I also just want to comment on metformin, because metformin, gosh, I mean, for years and years, it was the first line agent. It's like, even if you know nothing about diabetes, everyone knows metformin is first line. And that is no longer the case for everyone, at least. And so the complication-centric algorithm, metformin is not first line. You use the agents that are designed to treat and address the complications. You can add metformin later for additional glucose lowering. With this, with the glucose-centric, They actually lift lifestyle intervention first, then metformin, and then you add the agents based on these factors. So in this case, metformin, they're essentially still saying, yes, metformin is first line if you don't have pre-existing other conditions.
And, you know, the metformin, I think people, because sometimes we'll start them on something else, a secondary medication. So I stop my metformin? It's like, no, there's some really good, there's a lot of good happening behind the scenes that you're not seeing because the disease is progressing, right? So you start them on metformin, their A1C comes down there, and then all of a sudden, slowly over time, it starts to creep up again, right? And that's not, you don't want to take that away, right? We stop metformin for GI symptoms and kidney or liver issues, right? Severe kidney disease or liver disease. But we really do. I leave it in the background all the time. I don't stop it.
Yeah. And then another thing that I like about this algorithm too, and this has been the case of the last one as well, but they mention all of the diabetes drug classes, not just kind of like the heavy hitters. So it, granted, it's lower on the treatment algorithm, but they make special note if someone's not reaching their goals with the current therapies, you can add on maybe some of the less common ones like colcevelam, for example, or bromocriptine or pramlintide. So they do mention those other classes as well.
So then, let's talk weight loss, because I think there's going to be a lot happening in weight loss in the next Right. Not only just right now, but in the next year or so, as we expect other GLP, even GLP, GIP therapies to be FDA approved specifically for weight loss. And we've got some powerful ones out there now. And I think that we're going to use this a lot in our, what do we look at? I love that they've created this table.
Yeah, no, the table is really, really great. And I was surprised, actually, the semaglutide percentage of weight loss was actually a little bit higher than I had even anticipated. Like when I like how it includes the percentage weight loss you expect. And so the GLP-1s by far, I mean, just the semaglutide has the most, it's 15 to 18%. And then the next one is really that phentermine-topiramate combination. Liraglutide is actually just 5 to 6%, and then everything else is listed as less. Now, tirzepatide's not in here, which that would likely change with the next update, but that's just because it doesn't have, these are just FDA-approved weight loss medications, not everything.
Right. I like that it is a, what are you looking for? So that when you do, as a prescriber, when I have a conversation with someone and I say, let's try this, we expect this amount of weight loss with this medication so that someone's expectations are set. You know, some people have slightly more, some people have slightly less, but this is what the expectation is. This is what the average weight loss is, so that we're not setting up expectations that don't make sense or that aren't fair to the person that's sitting in front of us hoping, you know, for a different outcome. It also makes you want to think about, well, and this is what our weight loss colleagues do so well, combining medications, right? And what does that do? Can we combine two different things to increase that, to potentiate the effect even, not just add it together? So 18 plus 6, right? What if they potentiate each other and we can get 22% or 28% or whatever it is adding two together? And those are the things we don't really, there's not a lot of data on the combinations at this time.
Yeah. And I also, there's a really nice chart on the profile of anti-hyperglycemic medication. So I think people will really like this because it has every single class, even the less common drug classes are all listed on here. And then it goes into great detail about its efficacy of glucose lowering, if it has benefit for cardiovascular disease or not, if it has benefit or not in CKD, if a renal adjustment is needed, if there's a hypoglycemia risk, which I think a lot of people might be surprised that there's actually very few drug classes that directly cause hypoglycemia. It's insulin and secretagogue, like your sulfonylurea and your glutenide. The other classes, when used by themselves, are not expected to cause hypoglycemia based on their mechanism. So this is such a good cheat sheet. I mean, really, it's like everyone should just, like, I don't know, print this and put it up on their wall.
I use it. I've been using the old one, right? For every student that walks in the door, for everyone who has questions. Sometimes I'll even bring it out for people with diabetes who want this kind of data. This is public knowledge. This is not something we should be hiding, right? So sometimes I'll pull it out and say, look, these are our options, and this is why I'm leaning towards this versus that, and help with the discussion.
Yeah. Also, a lot of times people will ask me, how do you know how to titrate insulin? Or similarly, how do you know how to de-intensify insulin if you're adding on like a GLP-1 agonist? So there is a fantastic chart, the algorithm for adding intensifying insulin. But also within this chart, it says what to do for hypoglycemia. So often I follow that advice for de-escalating insulin doses if we're adding on another therapy or someone's losing weight and we're trying to prevent hypoglycemia or reduce it. So this, to me, looks similar from the one they previously had in the older version, but it's such a good resource. I want to remind people that it's here, and it talks about when and how to start basal insulin, when you add mealtime insulin, and how you go about adding it. Usually with usually one meal at a time is typically how we do it, either with the largest meal of the day or the meal of the day where glucose rises the most. And then you can continue adding on from there up until, you know, if you need to add with all the meals as needed.
And I love that, you know, that it is highlighted. Use of CGM is recommended to reach glycemic goals safely, right? In the background, it's really hard to dose insulin when people with diabetes, their life gets in the way, right? I mean, we talk about this a lot. They have other things to do. They don't check as often. I'd love to see, you know, can you check 2 hours after meal? Sure, I'm running around after my kids. I got a soccer game. I got this one doing this. I got, you know, and there's a lot going on in their lives. So it becomes difficult when you can't see the data. So recommending CGM with insulin titration, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, it totally makes sense. Yeah. And there's great coverage for it. So we definitely should be doing that. Another thing I like on here, and it's also in the ADA one, but I'm so glad it's here, is the BEAM score. So that's the bedtime glucose minus basically the AM, the morning or pre-breakfast glucose. And if that is greater than 50, meaning there's more than a 50-point drop, or similarly, if when basal doses even get to beyond 0.5 units per kilogram per day, that's when we start worrying that someone might be over-basalized and they have a call out there that would be an identifier that, hey, we should start to add prandial insulin. So, gosh, so many good nuggets here. I'm just really, I am loving this algorithm. I know we're not going to have time to go through everything, but I want to let our listeners know that there's also a pre-diabetes algorithm on here. There's also a specific one for dyslipidemia, for hypertension, and there's even a vaccine recommendations as well. So I just want to applaud all the authors that worked on this. I think they did a tremendous job. There's so much new information to synthesize, and I think they did a fantastic job on all of that. And I want to encourage people to check it out, to read it.
And I love that they're addressing all the different aspects of disease, right? So you need to manage the lipids, you need to manage blood pressure, you need to manage, right, the obesity if it is occurring. You need to, you know, so this is a complex disease, right? And so even vaccines, you know, we work this hard and someone's going to get pneumonia, right? Like, so, you know, those kinds of things we need to be addressing as clinicians. We can't just keep sending it back to somebody else to do it, right? Or work in conjunction with your other clinical colleagues in order to make sure if you are not doing it as a clinician, that somebody is.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Well, I think that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, and we hope to catch you again next time.